The parsha this week is Parsha Shemos, and it's also the beginning of Sefer Shemos. So it's worthwhile to talk a little bit about the significance of the Sefer, the actual name of the book, and what is the purpose, what is the theme of Sefer Shemos, the book of Shemos. So Shemos means names, right? And the simple understanding, I mean, every parsha is named based upon one of the words in the first pasuk of the parasha. So, you know, some people will just say, well, it's just, happenstance or no great significance in terms of giving a name of a parasha based upon a word in the first pasuk. You got to pick one word. But we've spoken about this before, that the choice of the words of the parashias, the actual names of the parashias, are very significant. So with this one, and with, because this is also the beginning of the Sefer as well. So it's taken after the second word in the pasuk, Ve'lishmos b'nei Yisrael abay Mitzrayim. These are the names of the b'nei Yisrael who came down to Mitzrayim. And the pasuk can go on to list off the names of the Shvatim, the tribes, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. They were the Shvatim who came to Mitzrayim. And it's called Shemos, names based upon those names at the beginning of the parasha. And then the whole Sefer is called Shemos. So there's discussion, a lot of discussion about the significance of the word names, Shemos, names. As we know, Shemos, names, or a name, is very telling about the essence of anything, right? We've just spoken about this before, that the word shame, name, is in the word neshama, right? The word neshama contains the letter shame inside of it. And essentially, the concept is that your name, or the name of the thing, or the name of the person, is a window into the neshama of the person. Right? If you want to know what your kochos are, what your special talents and potential and kochos are, look at your name, look at the Hebrew name. And there's discussions about this. We're not going to discuss that now. Right? But that's the standard understanding of the reason why, or the word Shemos, names, and it's taken after the names of the Shvatim at the beginning of the parasha. And that's one name of the parasha, and that's also one name of the Sefer. But what's interesting is, if you do a bit of digging and searching around, there's actually two other names of Sefer Shemos, which are less commonly spoken about. So one of them is actually mentioned in a Gemara, the Gemara in Sota, Lamed Vav Mabez. And the Gemara says, essentially, it identifies or calls Sefer Shemos, the book of Exodus. Exodus is just the translation. That's actually not really, maybe it'll tie into something, but that's the English. But the Gemara describes Sefer Shemos as Chumash Sheni. Chumash Sheni, the second Chumash, right? Now, you know, it could have said anything else. It could have said one of the other names. It could have said Sefer Shemos. But the Gemara says it's Chumash Sheni, the second Chumash. And then that's also explained by the Emek Dava, famous commentator, the Netziv Emek Dava. And he quotes an earlier source, Rabbeinu Bahag, the Bahag, who says also that Sefer Shemos is called Sefer Sheni. And he goes out of his way to call it Sefer Sheni. Now, the Bahag, who calls it Sefer Sheni, the second book, in the same sentence as describing it as Sefer Sheni, he also identifies and labels the other books of the Chumash as well. And he says there are five books of the Chumash, the Sefer Bereishis, and then there's Chumash Sheni, the second Chumash, and then the Sefer Kohanim, the book of Kohanim, which is Leviticus, the Chumash Pekudim, which is Bamidbar, Numbers, or Mishnah Torah, Devarim. So in labeling the names of the Chumash, he gives special names to each of them, with the exception of Shemos, our book, and calls it Sefer Sheni, the second book. Like the Gemara, Sefer Sheni, or Chumash Sheni. So what is that about? So the Emek Dava says, it's a very fundamental concept to appreciate what's happening in Sefer Shemos. What's happening in Sefer Shemos, it's a continuation of Bereishis. In the sense of, what is Bereishis all about? Bereishis is the book of creation. It's the book of creation. the creation of the universe, the creation of the world. But the continuation and the hemshach of that is Sefer Sheni, which is the book of Exodus, our Sefer, which is the continuation of creation, but not creation of the world, the creation of the Jewish people, right? The creation of us, the creation of Klal Yisrael. Read the words, he says, in this Sefer is Nigma Seida Habriya. The creation is completed. As it says in the beginning, one of the names, the word Bereshis for the first book, is one of the drushes which we make on the word Bereshis, is Bishvil Reshis, for the sake of the Reshis of the world. Who is the Reshis of the world? Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is the Reshis, is the first of the world, is the first one of the world. So Bereshis is Bishvil, the name is called Bishvil Yisrael, for the sake of Klal Yisrael, Shenikru Reshis, who are called Reshis. That's why the world is created. We are the purpose of the world to fulfill the will of God and to fulfill our mission, obviously, in the world. Not an egocentric mission, but it's a responsibility. And that's not completed. The identity and the birth of the reality of the Jewish people is not completed. Ashiyotzi Yisrael Mitzrayim, until they leave Mitzrayim, Ubo L'Tachlisom, and they come to their purpose, Shiyiroyim Lios L'Oregoyim, that they should be fitting to become a light to the nations, L'Hamidom Al Yediyas Elokei Olam, and to stand them upon the knowledge of God. That's our purpose. Vezeu tachlis abri, that's the purpose of creation. Shenivra l'kavod yisbarach, creation is created for the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Animtza de matan Torah hu gemar abriya, the giving of the Torah is the completion of creation. Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah is the completion of creation. V'hainu hat yitzis Mitzrayim, that's part of that is the Exodus. Yitzis Mitzrayim, she'az ha'yiroyim l'yisrael l'kabla Torah, because then they became worthy to receive the Torah. To complete creation, to come to the purpose of their creation. So therefore, this is Sefer Sheni, this is the Chumash Sheni, this is part two. It's part two of creation, right? Bereshis is part one of creation. Shemos is part two of creation. And therefore, it's called Sefer Sheni, Chumash Sheni, the second book. That's one name, right? Another name, the Ramban famously says, and this is at the end of Sefer Shemos, he says at the very end, he says, V'hine nishlam Sefer Geula. Herein ends the Sefer of Geula. And he describes Shemos as the book of redemption. And that's why I hesitated before. Exodus is really similar to that. That's really what Exodus is Geula. So the Ramban says it's called Sefer Geula. So that's where, if you want to say, where does the word Exodus come from? The Ramban. Nachmanides, he coins the expression Exodus because he calls Sefer Shemos a Sefer Geula, the book of redemption. Asher Hashem Elokei Yisrael bo levnei Yisrael am krova, in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to his people, to the Klal Yisrael. So it's also called Sefer Geula as well, redemption. And if you think about it, it really is the same thing as Sefer Sheni, because what is redemption? Redemption is the fulfillment. It's the fulfillment of a purpose. When something or a person is redeemed, they are, up until that point, they are constricted, they are contained, and now they come out and they're revealed. It's their creation, right? Klal Yisrael is created, and therefore it's the geula, the redemption of Klal Yisrael is the creation of Klal Yisrael, and it's the culmination of Bria, culmination of creation. There's also a medrash, the beginning of the medrash, Bereshis Rabba, at the very beginning of the Chumash, it says, "Amar Reb Simon." Reb Simon said, "Chamesh pa'amim k'siv kan ora." In the account of creation, the expression of light is mentioned five times in the account of creation, and the Medrash says, "Keneged chamisha chumshei Torah," corresponding to the five books of the Torah, because each book of the Torah is light. Each one is light. Each one brings into the world a new like color, a new dimension of light. So he says, the Medrash goes on, V'yom Elokim Yihi Oro, Hashem said, let there be light. That corresponds to Bereshis, Sefer Bereshis. Shebo Nisasek HaKadosh Baruch Hu Boras Olama, in which he created the physical universe. And the next expression, V'yihi Oro, and it was light, is Keneged Sefer Ve'le Shemos, corresponds to Shemos, our Sefer. Shebo Yotze Yisrael Ma'afele L'Oro, in which the Jewish people go from darkness to light. This is the Sefer where we come out of darkness, we become light, we come to light. Geula, redemption. Sefer Sheni, the completion of creation. The completion of creation. It's a very beautiful, you know, thought to keep in mind as we're traveling through Sefer Shemos. This is the blueprint. This is the whole blueprint of the Jewish people's creation. And by extension, our creation as well. That's the theme of the entire Sefer Shemos. And it culminates. What's the culmination of Sefer Shemos? Is the Mishkan. Is the descent of the cloud, of the Shekhinah upon the Mishkan. Because that is the ultimate, that is the apex of the entire experience of the redemption of the Klal Yisrael. Matan Torah, Shekhinah, Sefer Sheni. It's part two of creation, purpose of creation, Tachlis of Bria, Sefer Geula, Sefer Sheni. And for this reason, there's another Medrash, which is going back to the names of the Shvatim at the beginning of the Parsha. So the Medrash says, Eila Shemos B'nei Yisrael, these are the names of the B'nei Yisrael, Al Shem Geulas Yisrael. They're all named based upon the purpose of the Sefer, which is the redemption of Israel. The names of the B'nai Yisrael are mentioned at the beginning of the Parsha, the beginning of the Sefer, Al Shem, for the sake of Geulis Yisrael, in the name of the redemption and the Geul of Klal Yisrael. And the Medrash goes on to expound each of the names of the Shvatim as a window and a angle on Geula, on redemption. For example, Reuven, right? Reuven, what does the word Reuven mean? Right? Reuven is based upon the Pasuk, Re'o Re'isi Es Ani Ami. Now, this is not the name that he was given by Leah, but the Medrash links the names to different psukim to reveal a dimension of the name connecting to Geula, redemption. Re'o Re'isi Es Ani Ami. Later on in the parasha is in Parak Gimel, Pasuk Zion, it says, I have seen the affliction of my people. Hashem says, I saw the affliction of my people. The word Reuven has the word re'iyah, to see inside of it, right? That's what the word Reuven means, re'u b'nei, that's where it comes from. So it alludes to the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees our pain and sees our affliction and redeems us. Shimon is connected to Perek Beis, Pasuk Chav Dalet, Vayishma Elokim, Es Na'akosam, that Hashem heard our grievances, he heard our cries. Vayishma Shimon, to hear. And the Medrash goes on with every name of the Shvatim to connect it to this whole story, to the whole saga of the redemption of Klal Yisrael from Mitzrayim, and all the way to the future, in fact, actually, because Yosef, right? Yosef, it's not because the redemption of Klal Yisrael and the Geula is not just the one-time event of Yitzis Mitzrayim and Matan Torah, it's our entire journey through history. That's the redemption of Klal Yisrael. The redemption of Klal Yisrael for the purpose of fulfilling the Tachlis of Bria, fulfilling the purpose of creation, is not a historical event. It's an ongoing event. It's happening now. And we are marching towards the final Geula, the final redemption. That's the true redemption. The ultimate redemption of Klal Yisrael and for the world, Tachlis of Bria, is an ongoing story. Therefore, the names all connect to different stages of the journey of Klal Yisrael, of that Geula, leading up to Yosef, the last one, not going through all of them, you can take a look at the Medrash, but Yosef, the name Yosef, Al-Shem She'asid HaKadosh Baruch Hu La'osiv Ligol Es Yisrael, based upon the fact that in the future HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to continue and to add on, to redeem Klal Yisrael, the Malchus Rishah, from the evil subjugation, Keshem Shagalo Sam Mitzrayim, the same way that he redeemed them from Mitzrayim. So all of the names span the entire course of history, speaking about and giving us the picture of Geula, of the redemption of Klal Yisrael for the sake of the world. So this is what Sefer Shemos is all about, right? And obviously, it's I always think about this every year as we start Sefer Shemos in the wintertime. And, you know, so we're learning about Geula, we're learning about the redemption, and we're going to relive it on Pesach. So we have to look at these several weeks now as we approach Pesach. Pesach, I think, is like 12 weeks from now. You know, it's amazing how fast it comes again. So Pesach is coming in a few months from now. And now we have the opportunity to learn intellectually. And I shouldn't really say that, because every learning isn't just intellectual, it's application as well. The difference is between the learning which we're doing now in these parashiyos leading up to Pesach is we are learning in our own way, in the way to assimilate the information, the ideas, and to apply the ideas along the way. But the real reliving of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Geula, is going to come on Lel Seder. So we are blessed. We are so blessed to be able to experience and to experientially go through Geula. We're learning about Geula, all of these parashas and Shemos, all about Geula redemption, personal redemption, collective, national redemption, and then we're going to relive it on Lel Seder, go through the whole experience on Pesach itself. So that's what Sefer Shemos is all about. So that's a little bit of an introduction. But I want to go into, take a look, if you have a Chumash, it's chapter, it's Perek Beis, Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Because Perek Beis, Pasuk Chaf Gimel, really describes, you know, we're talking about Geula. And let's go back to the Geula of Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim. So we know the story. They suffered for many years under Paro, and it got worse and worse and worse. He kept increasing the servitude and the slavery. It got worse and worse. And until things changed, they were essentially like had no hope. They felt they had no hope. There was no hope to the increasing and intensifying slavery they were being put to. The point at which the tables turned was actually Perek Beis, Pasuk, chapter 2, Pasuk, here it is over here, Pasuk, I'm going to go to Pasuk Chav Dalet, 24, right? Actually, well, yeah, 20, let's go back, sorry, Chav Gimel, 23. Because this is the Pasuk at which the tables begin to turn. At which point the Geula, the lights of Geula, the light of redemption begins to shine, right? Everything up until this point was just sorrow and pain and servitude and persecution. But Chaf Gimel 23 is the moment when the tables turn. What does it say? It was in those many days. The king of Mitzrayim, Paro, died. I'll come back to that in a second. He died. And the Jewish people, they groaned. They groaned because of the work they were experiencing. And they cried out, and their outcry because of the work went up to Hashem. And next pasuk, Vayishma Elokim es Nakosum, Hashem heard their outcry. Vayiskra Elokim es Briso, he remembered the covenant, as Avram with Avram, Yitzchak and Yaakov. Vayar Elokim es Bnei Yisrael, Hashem saw the Bnei Yisrael, he saw their affliction. Vayeda Elokim, he understood, he took it to heart. And the next pasuk, Moshe Hiroes Tzon Yisrael. Moshe was shepherding the sheep of Yisrael. And this is where Moshe is in Midian. And that's when he meets Tzipora, gets married to Tzipora, the whole story with Yisrael, and then the burning bush as well. Everything begins over here. This is the turning point. This is the turning point. So therefore, Pasuk Chaf Gimel is the climax of the tzara. It's the climax of the affliction. It's the climax of the persecution. At which point everything switches around, and now Hashem listens and hears, takes heed, and takes action, and brings Moshe to him, to the burning bush, and the rest is history, right? So this is the culmination. So when I was looking at the Pasuk this week, I was very struck by the following, because it says, Vayihi b'yom Rabbi Mehem. Now, in those many days, now the Ramban Nachmanides talks a lot about that expression, Vayihi b'yom HaRabim, in those many days. So one of the explanations he gives, which really is consistent with what we're describing over here, this culmination and the climax of affliction, he says, Yom HaRabim Mehem refers to those many days. It's referring to, he says, really, it was a short period of time, but when pain is so bad, it feels like forever. When a person is suffering, it feels like forever. So therefore, when it says Vayihi b'yom HaRabim Mehem, and it was in those many days, really wasn't that many days, but it felt like eternity because the pain was so terrible, it felt like eternity. So that really, you know, fits in with the picture that this pasuk is capturing the intensity of the suffering of the Jewish people, at which point Hashem listens and delivers them. But the pasuk goes on. Yomas Melech Mitzrayim. The king of Mitzrayim died. Paro died. Now, let me ask you a question. I mean, did anyone hear that before? Now, there's a pasuk earlier in the beginning of the parasha that at the very beginning of the parasha, it says, V'yokab Melech Chodesh on Mitzrayim, a new king arose in Mitzrayim. So that there's a machlokas in the Gemara. Was that really a new king altogether, a new paro? Or was it he just renewed his decrees, right? But according to the, so that's a fame, that's a well-known idea. But according to the opinion, that was a new king. So that was, we already have two kings. Now in this pasuk over here, 23, that king died. Pasuk says, Melech Mitzrayim died, he died. So I bet most people don't know that there's at least two, possibly three paros in the story of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. It says he died, and then it says they groaned because of the pain of the work of the servitude. They cried out, etc. The obvious question is why would they cry over paro's death? Why would they cry over paro's death? Like they'd be happy. So Ramban asked this question. And he says the reason why they cried over his death, because they were terrified about who the next king would be. They were afraid of who's going to be the next Russia of a leader, another satanic paro after him. It's going to be worse and worse. So they cried over the death of the previous paro. You know, what's the expression? Better the devil you know than the devil you don't know. So therefore they cried over that, right? But he died. According to the Ramban, he died. So therefore you have at least two, possibly three paros in Mitzrayim. However, Rashi brings a medrash on this phrase that he died, that he didn't die. He didn't die, right? It was the same paro. Rashi says, Yomas Melech Mitzrayim, when it says the paro died, doesn't mean he died. It means that he was as though he died. It was as though he died. What's as though he died? Medrash says that he developed leprosy. He got leprosy. This is well known. People know this medrash that he bathed in Jewish blood. Where does that medrash come? Where does that come from? It comes from this pasuk over here, because he developed the condition of skin leprosy, tsaras. And the only way to remedy the tsaras was his advisors told him, you've got to bathe in Jewish blood. And that's where the story comes from, that they killed Jewish babies and he bathed in the Jewish blood to soothe him of the suffering and the pain of his leprosy. But the reason why the pasuk phrases this in terms of him dying is because the Gemara says, a metzora is choshev kames. Someone who has leprosy has the status of being a dead person. So therefore, when it says he died, that's aka he got saras, he got leprosy. And because of that, in order to soothe himself and to remedy his leprosy, he had to have Jewish babies killed, and that's where that medrash comes from. So he didn't really die. So according to Rashi in this medrash, only one, possibly two kings lived in Mitzrayim. But Yomas Melech Mitzrayim, he died, leprosy. And then the pasuk says, V'yonchu b'nei Yisrael min avoda. And then they cried out because of the avoda, because of the servitude. So asks one of the commentators on Rashi, the Re'im, he asks if it's true that if it's true that he had leprosy and he didn't really die, and their babies were being murdered and butchered to take care of Paro, then why would the pasuk say that they cried out because of the servitude and the slavery? I mean, what's worse, having the babies killed, having their children killed, or having slave labor? Obviously, their children being murdered is far worse than slave labor. So if the phrase, he died, refers to the fact that he got leprosy and he needed to be remedied with Jewish blood, then why would the verse then go on to say, and they cried because of their slavery? Slave, that pales in comparison to the catastrophe and the horror of the fact that their children were being murdered to take care of their king. It pales in comparison. So he says what it means is that they were really crying over the fact that their babies were being murdered. But they couldn't reveal that. They had to conceal it. Because if they would reveal the fact that they are so grieving over their children dying, then that would equal we don't want the king to stay alive. You see, we have to realize these kinds of leaders, these kinds of people have such a grip upon the people, and any type of rebellion, any kind of deviance, any kind of rebellion, any kind of expression of rebellion against their leaders is the death penalty. So for the Jewish people to openly express their grief and their pain over the death of their children would be a ticket, would be a prescription for their own execution, their own death. So they had to pretend that they were really crying over the slavery. And that slavery was difficult. So they were, you know, they were open about that, but they weren't open about the fact that their children were being killed because what, you don't want the king to stay alive? You know, you want our king to, you want the king to die of his leprosy? You know, this is necessary. We have to sacrifice Jewish blood in order to save him, to protect him. And you're crying over that. So they concealed it. They concealed it. So that's why the verse says that they cried over the slavery. They weren't really crying over the slavery. They're crying over the fact that children are being murdered, right? That's what's really going on. So that's how the commentaries explain this pasuk. Now, if you think about it for a second, if you just think about it, essentially, right? This, remember, keep in mind, this is the culmination of the suffering of the Jewish people, at which point Hashem comes in and saves them and introduces Moshe to the story, right? Now, why would, I was really bothered by this. So why would the pasuk camouflage the whole story of Paro getting saras and phrasing it in the form of he died? It was like, because a person has leprosy is like he's dead. Like, what's the message over there? Like, why do we need to, I mean, it may be true that leprosy is like a person who's dead, but that should be the highlight of the verse. And then also, number one, he didn't really die. He really had leprosy. And number two, they weren't crying and screaming over the slavery. They were crying and screaming over their children being killed. Why is the whole thing camouflaged? Why is the truth of the story not conveyed over here? Why is it camouflaged in these metaphors that he died? He didn't really die. He had leprosy. You know, and why? And they're crying over the slave. They're not crying over the slave. They're crying over their children being murdered. Why is it all being camouflaged? So that was my question, and I thought to myself. I kept thinking to myself. I don't like. I'm just going to put this on the table. It's a thought I had. So you know, I'm always very, very particular about quoting sources. So you know, if someone asks you who said this, you can say the rack said it. Right, that's, you know, that's my initials, but it's a thought. But I think, you know, what I'm going to say right now, the concept is true. So, and I actually did run it by a few people to see what these other rabbis thought about it, and I got a so to speak a haskama from some other rabbis as well. But I was thinking to myself, I was just bothered by the fact that this verse over here is painting the picture of the climax and the culmination of the suffering of the Jewish people. And yet in this pasuk, the reality of the story is camouflaged. And it conveys the idea that he got saras in the form of he died. And the whole thing is camouflaged. So I thought perhaps, right, that, you know, when a person is grieving and a person is suffering, to be able to, it's one thing to suffer, but to have to conceal your suffering and to mask your suffering is even more painful. Right, that's just a reality. When a person can't articulate their suffering and they have to be contained and masked and not articulated, it's so painful. That's a pain which is beyond all pain. You're in pain, but you can't talk about it. You don't know how to talk about it. The fact that the pasuk is saying, right, when it says that the Paro died, that's essentially the voice, that's the narrative of the Jewish people to their Egyptian hosts. Yeah, he died. Like, it's terrible for him. It must be so bad for Paro, our king. Like, he has leprosy. It's like he's dead. He's got a lifeless life. Like, it must be so terrible. And yes, it's justified that Jewish blood should be killed to make him better. That's the narrative. The verses of Yomis Paro, when it says he died, that's the narrative that the Jewish people have to basically project outwards and deny their own feelings and their own true feelings and not be able to articulate it. And then also to say, what are you crying about? The Egyptians are saying to the Jews, what are you crying about? Oh, we're crying about the slavery, slavery, slavery. The intensity of their pain and their grief is being trapped inside of them. They can't talk about it. They can't articulate it. They can't express it. That's a pain beyond all pain. And, you know, we can relate to this. for a person to be redeemed from that pain, the worst kind of pain to be redeemed from is the pain when you can't even express the pain you're going through. That's the worst kind of pain. This pasuk is essentially saying that they were in horrific pain, but they couldn't articulate that pain. And that's the pain they were experiencing. And then it kind of fits in very well, because the next word of the pasuk, after it says that they groaned, it says v'yizaku, and they were, I just want to point something out as a side point over here. Throughout, there's actually midrashim, and throughout Tanakh, there are many words we have for prayer. It's actually, I have a sefer over here called Sharam B'Tefillah, a very famous sefer by Reshim Shem Pinchas of blessed memory. And it's translated into English. It's all of the different expressions we have for prayer in the Torah and Tanakh. And there's actually 10 expressions of tefillah. There's Rina, there's Bitzo, there's Sha'ava, there's all these different tefillah, all these different expressions. And this sefer goes through all of the expressions of prayer, explaining what the uniqueness and the nuance of one type of prayer from a different kind of prayer. You see, prayer is communication, prayer is articulation, prayer is the expression of the self to Hashem. And there are many ways in which we can express ourselves, more intensive, less intensive ways, and the whole sefer goes through the different ways we talk to Hashem. This pasuk actually has a few of those expressions. So two of them is right over here. In 23, it says, Yizo'aku, that they cried out, the Odd Scroll translates it as, they cried out. And then it says, V'tal sha'avasa melelukim, and their outcry went up before Hashem. So these are just attempts to translate these Hebrew words, but you have to appreciate these Hebrew words are laden with depth and meaning and significance. And that's what this Sefer talks about. So the Zohar says that the difference between Za'aka and Sha'ava. The Zohar even says this. The difference between these two expressions of Za'aka and Za'aka is Za'aka, the word Za'aka, Za'aka, same word, Za'aka and Sha'ava. What's the difference, says Rabbi Yitzchak? In the Zohar, Ein lecha Sha'ava ela b'tefila. Yes, Sha'ava is tefila's prayer, but Za'aka is Shetzoeg ve'ena omeklum. Tsa'aka or za'aka is crying out without saying a word. Tsa'aka is cry, or za'aka, the zayin and the tzadi are interchangeable. Za'aka tsa'aka is crying out without words. Says Rabbi Yehuda, Hilka gedola tsa'aka mekula. Tsa'aka is greater than all of them. Should tsa'aka he believe, because tsa'aka is inside the heart. It's tsa'aka. Crying as za'aka tza'aka is crying without words. It's wordless words of the heart. It's the crying of the heart. It's the expression of the heart with no words, because you're muted. You can't say any words. And in our story over here, they're muted because they can't express the true intensity of their grief, because it's too dangerous for them to do that. But as it applies to all of us, sometimes we feel muted inside of ourselves. We can't express ourselves. We can't express ourselves. Za'aka tza'aka is the crying of the heart without words. Za'aka za'aka davar echad hu. V'zeh krova l'akadosh baruch hu yosma tefila v'anocha. It's closer to Hashem than the other expressions of tefila and anocha. All the other expressions. Crying of the heart without words is the most precious form of crying and tefila to Hashem. When you can't say it, when you can't find the words. I don't know what to say. I don't know how to say it. I don't know what I want to say. I'm just stuck. I'm muted. My mouth is closed up. That itself is an opportunity, because when the mouth is closed up and you can't find the words to express yourself, it's time to go deeper inside and just to kind of feel the pain of the heart. That is a cry. That's a tefillah. That's a form of tefillah. When the heart is crying within, that's a kind of tefillah. And that's the word which describes this passage over here, this heightened level of pain and sorrow and grief that they were experiencing. They couldn't articulate the pain they were going through, and therefore the pasuk says, Za'aka, they cried out, in English, cried out, but that's not crying out with words, it's crying out with the heart, because that's what this passage is. This is the passage of the ultimate pain, the ultimate suffering, the ultimate suffering they were experiencing, at which point everything broke, and the windows of Shemayim broke open, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu listened, and he heard that because that's the closest to Hashem. The cry of that heart with wordless words of the heart, that's when it breaks through, and that's when Hashem listens, and that's why the whole thing turns around over here. The Rabbeinu Bechaya, right, another commentator on the Chumash, says that this whole passage is not just applicable to then; the whole thing is applicable to the future as well. He says the same thing as well. He says Esha Loma Ki Parsha Hazos. He says this parsha over here is a remez, it's an allusion, legulaseinu, to our future redemption. In the future, it's taluy b'teshuva tefillah, it's dependent upon teshuva, on prayer, but the kind of teshuva from the most intensive place of pain and sorrow. Ki geula mitzrayim chazu b'teshuva ispallu l'Hashem, and they pray to Hashem, this time of tremendous pain and suffering, this kabbalah tefillasam, that tefillah was accepted, bo lehem agol, the redeemer came, al kein somar, that's why the first pasuk, the first word of the very next chapter is Moshe, right? After this, Moshe, the Redeemer comes along. After this, after tefillah, in the midst of pain, comes along the Geula, comes along Moshe, comes along the Redeemer, comes along the Geula in our lives. But it's coming from this very, very hard place, this difficult place sometimes, of being trapped, of being trapped in our own hearts. But we have to realize that is actually a tremendous potential. So in the Sefer over here by Rav Shimshon Pinkas, I want to read that to you. He said, "Be'emes ikka matzah zeh shchiach mo'o." This concept, this phenomena of being basically muted and not being able to express ourselves is a very common phenomena. That a person in his bitterness is not able to open his mouth in davening. He can't like say the words properly. He can't relate to the words. Sometimes it comes from the tremendous pain and his broken heart. Sometimes it's because he feels he's standing with great distance from a Kaddish Baruch Hu. And he's not worthy of coming close to the holiness of Hashem. And in the meantime, he stops davening, he stops praying. Listen, incline your ears to what this is similar to. It's compared to somebody. Someone who's looking for a precious stone, a sapphire stone, and he's digging in the ground over here and over here, b'chofshi as a matan to find the gem. V'hine agia l'mokim sh'adam u'koshi, reaches a place where the ground is very hard and he's not able to. It's just very hard. You can't pick up the earth over there. Acheni yochel lifkos, he can't even get in there. He can't break the earth. And he tries, and he's not able to. What does he do? He walks away from the situation. Someone sees him. He says, "What are you doing? You're a fool. You're a fool." Hagata l'sanpurinon. That's exactly where the sapphire, that's where the gem is. It's precisely in that part of the ground which is so hard and so crusted over. That's where the gem is found. And the sign is because you can't dig over there. Don't go away. Don't leave the place. Don't leave the place if you want to get it. See, he says the same thing is true for us, he says. If you reach a place of shivrin lev, a broken heart, ki'ilem, where you feel broken, you feel muted, you can't open your mouth in tefillah because you're so, just feel distant, you feel pain, you feel just a sense of distance and an emptiness, a vacuum inside, that's where the treasure lies. The treasure lies in that place of complete distance and complete brokenness and complete emptiness of heart is where the treasure lies. That's where that's where tsa'aka is. That's what tsa'aka is. That it's the heart. The heart is just like it wants to express itself. It can't express. That's tsa'aka. That's the cry of the heart. I can't say words. I don't know what to say. I feel distant. But paradoxically, that's the cry of the heart. So let's look at that. He says, person needs to cry, gamble lichituch milim, even without without articulation of words. It's just feeling that pain, that feeling, that emptiness, feeling that chasm inside, that cry, the silent cry is tzaaka, is tzaaka. I heard, yes, I was listening to someone speak yesterday. He was saying that you know, and this is a global principle, right? With all of the challenges we have in life, because every challenge, we want to run away. We want challenges to go away. But this person, this rabbi was speaking, he was saying that he says a banana, right? A banana is so delicious, but the shell, the skin of the banana is like this thick, leathery, you know, thick skin. You know, if a person would be so naive and foolish, would just look at that and say, there's nothing there. But precisely because it's so sweet and delicious in the inside, there's a thick skin on the outside. And he said this, quoting from Rav Nachman of Breslov, that it's the same thing with all of our challenges, with all of our unique challenges and obstacles and klipas which we have in our lives. That whatever that is, that's a window, that's a clue to the fact that there's a tremendously sweet and fantastic inside behind that klipa, behind that shell, behind that hard, crusty shell around. So whatever the challenge is, the nature of that challenge, don't be afraid of that challenge. Recognize that challenge, inside that challenge, behind the scenes, or beyond that challenge, lies potential in that very area of the challenge to the exact opposite of whatever the challenge is. So, for example, if a person has, just comes to mind, person has a tremendous yetzahara with anger and patience and lack of patience, therein lies his potential to become a tremendously patient, merciful person. That anger is his shell, which is the hard shell, which behind that is the sweetness and the softness and the delicious kindness of being a very patient and merciful person. Whatever the challenge is, back to this over here, if a person's feeling like their heart is blocked up, and they can't articulate themselves, and they can't express their emotions, they can't express themselves to Hashem, therein lies a tremendous potential to be able to talk to Hashem. And it just starts with that cry of the heart, without any words, just crying out, trying to tap into that cry, and that feeling of pain of being so far away, not being able to articulate oneself. And that's a little bit, that's, I think, is an illusion over here in this parasha, right? Because the Jewish people are not able to articulate themselves. And that's where the geula comes from. It comes from that place, from that heightened climax of pain and sorrow and grief they're experiencing. And that's why it says, v'yizaku, that's that noun of tefillah, of the crying of the heart without any words, because they weren't able to. They were blocked from being able to express themselves. They all be zocha to geula, our own personal redemptions, and, you know, ultimately, our redemption, our individual redemption, should contribute towards the ultimate redemption of the Jewish people very quickly.